willing to look at these options, but this has been mulled over for months and months by people that understand tax system better than I do, and so I'm not really interested in looking at any other options at this time.
Madam Chair, if I might remark, I'm afraid if we change the bill, especially the major component of it, that it'll be rejected by the House and Senate Revenue Committee people. And because of the importance of the bill, could either extend the session or cause its failure. I think they would very much dislike us doing that here, although at times our committee often sees a better way to do something and we do it. Usually in bills that are more hastily considered by the substantive committees and ones that aren't quite so technical, perhaps. But I'm afraid if we do much to this one, we'll either lose it or get our session bogged down.
Well, the chair basically feels that it is not equitable to ask a group of people who can least afford the increase in interest rate to fund the majority of this program. Because you're talking about $14 million from the increase in interest rate and $4 million from the flat fee on the registration of documents, of the deeds. So I haven't looked at this program before, so would like to think over the options. There is another question on the constitutionality of imposing different interest rate, yes, different interest rate on different programs. So will you be prepared to answer that question? I think Mr. Ken Jones has shown you the letter I received.
That's a different question.
Mr. Jones.
That's a valuation procedure for vacant parcels within a subdivision of four or more parcels. And that's on the last page of the bill, and Mr. Munn can speak to that and may want to speak to that tomorrow. If I might, I know you have to get out of here, if I might assist the committee in management of your schedule. You have the treasurer's bill with Representative Bauman, Mr. Hopkins staffing that committee, that bill. You need to hear that bill. You have the homeowners property tax relief program and senior tax deferral that you need to hear and move on to full committee so that your full committee can complete action on the budget. With the committee's permission.
Do we have full committee tomorrow?
No, you had full committee this morning.
Oh, I'm talking about tomorrow.
No, I don't think so. If with the committee's permission to help you expedite action on this bill, I anticipate that you'll have one more day hearing on this bill. Could staff work with the Department of Revenue in preparing a budget report which will deal with the administrative costs for the department and bring that budget report in draft form back to you for your next hearing on this bill? Would that be premature or would that be timely as far as what you plan to do in terms of setting additional meetings for this, for 2338?
Well, the committee hasn't decided.
No, we would just be working up something in draft form based upon an analysis of the budget needs of just the Department of Revenue.
Yes, go ahead and prepare preliminary information.
Or I just need to understand for clarification,
Mr. Munn,
we going to be back tomorrow or not?
I'd suggest that you delay hearing on this bill at least until day after tomorrow and go ahead and let these other bills come forth to your committee.
Okay.
Okay, we'll meet on Thursday.
Thursday. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
And hear the two bills tomorrow. Thank you. Meeting's adjourned.
Ways and Means General Government Subcommittee will come to order.
Okay.
We're going to hear House Bill 2828 A and Gross. And Phil, do you want to give us an overview of this bill, please?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Phil Hopkins with Legislative Fiscal Office. This is a bill, as I understand it, that is already in place in other states and, in fact, is modeled after the state of Illinois. This is going to give, it's going to create a public entity called the Housing, Educational, and Cultural Facilities Authority. It's going to give them the power to take a lot of nonprofit organizations within this state and put them together for purposes of issuing bonds. These are entities such as I heard in the debt limitation testimony yesterday, such as OMSI. I think it has to do with the Shakespearean Festival. It includes other housing authorities, community colleges, various nonprofit organizations that either have some bonding authority or are too small to do it effectively. So they're going to come to this housing authority, and the housing authority will make, or this cultural HECFA, as I might name it, that's the initials for it, they're going to put them together, put a package deal together, and then what they'll do is they'll come to the state treasury, and the state treasury will use its existing bonding authority to issue revenue bonds. These are revenue bonds. And what the state treasury gets out of this is they're going to need one loan officer in order to run this program, who will start in the second year of this next biennium. And what they'll receive out of it is their commission, the normal commission for issuing the bonds. So the three of the members here are also on the capital construction and debt limitation committee that's in process now. And they heard testimony yesterday and the prior day about House Bill 2828 and how much bonding authority should be given to them. And there was some testimony by Representative Carter yesterday about whether it should be $20 million, which is in the bill currently, or would it be $80 million or $40 million? And they're up to speed on this whole issue.
Does he want to testify?
Does the state treasury want to testify?
Or does Representative Bill Dwyer want to testify?
I believe that Representative Bauman wanted to come down this morning.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be, happy to answer questions in the interim or provide any information.
I guess I have a question.
Will you identify yourself for
certainly
the record?
Michael Ryan, Treasury Department.
Representative Hanneman.
Mike, you appeared before the Housing Committee.
Yes.
How did the Housing Committee anticipate that some of these educational and cultural facilities were going to be able to pay for the revenue bonds? What did they say?
Madam Chair, Representative Hanneman, it really depended on the particular nonprofit or cultural institution relative to their individual revenue stream.
Yes.
If you were to, for example, take a look or think about OMSI, the potential for OMSI would be their gate receipts, the admissions, those type of things. If you were to look at the potential of the Newport Aquarium, for example, the same type of a thing might apply.
Then what the Capital Construction Committee did with that revenue bond section fits with this bill, doesn't it?
Yes, it does, Representative.
And this bill is needed in order to... Is it needed in order to fulfill what the Capital Construction Committee did?
Well, Representative Hanneman, actually what they ended up doing was to put in a limitation,
yes,
for control.
Sure.
So that really is the relationship there.
I think it's actually just the opposite. Bill. Oh, I'm sorry, Madam Chair. It's just the opposite. This bill needs 5062 bonding authority.
Yeah.
So the bonding authority is in 5062,
yes,
not in here.
Yes.
Why don't we put bonding authority in here?
Because I believe that deals with the whole issue of debt limitation in the state, since it's going to be issued under the covering of the state treasury.
Yes.
And so
Madam
that's
Chair.
Why you have to put it there. That bonding authority will allow the state treasury to receive the fees that they will do for this cultural.
Mm-hmm. So the other one is the so-called enabling legislation. And this is the policy legislation.
Mm-hmm. Create the entity.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Another question.
Representative Henry.
These types of facilities that can generate their own revenue from admissions or whatever else are not under current law eligible to issue revenue bonds without the bill. Is that right?
That's correct, Representative. Right.
Okay. Well, that's sure why it's here then.
By way of reference, I might give just a minute or two of background as to how this really came to the legislature and now ultimately before you for consideration. This is not a new concept nationally. The state of Illinois, for example, has had an authority in place for a number of years where it's worked extremely well, allowing institutions as art facilities, yeah, aquariums, yeah, et cetera, who move through the gauntlet of the private market and in fact prove their ability to repay. So it's a very stringent requirement. Not everyone certainly would qualify for the ability to.
Do we have any problem with this bill?
We don't have any problem, but we haven't heard all the testimonies yet. So if you're thinking about making a motion.
Well, if no one's opposed to it and there are no amendments,
we should
have to sit here all morning.
We should hear from Representative Baumann, who wanted to come and testify. She came 2 days ago.
Madam Chair, if I might, why don't I give you the fiscal impact?
Yes,
here,
let's hear the
clarify
fiscal
a couple
impact
items in here. We could
has
talk.
Anyone notified Judy Baumann that she
I asked the hearing Darn when I walked. Yeah. I asked Darn her to call.
We can just let the record show that she intended to show up to support it.
So Don knows
then we don't have to listen.
If we don't
she was definitely
bill,
interested.
We don't have
in
to worry about
system
all the motions that were made yesterday that just kind of nullified.
That, yeah, that's right. We can go back to meeting capital construction again.
Sounds like a good idea.
Oh, I don't want to go back there again. I had enough. I think we spent enough money in there.
I want to go back and get, so I can get my vote changed.
And then the bill won't come out.
I had to vote for it because there wasn't anybody else. And then Paul snuck in at the last minute.
Yeah, I came in and it was too late. I missed two or three of the votes. I don't want to go back there.
Do you want to hear the fiscal impact?
No.
Of this bill?
I don't.
You don't? Well, Phil, why don't you go ahead anyway?
Well, yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Well, one thing I want to point out is that there's a provision in there that to give a general fund loan of $10,000. So that's one of the key item there.
Look at it.
It's a $10,000 loan to be payable by, I think, June 30, 93. So they have 4 years to repay that. And the Treasury Department estimates that they will need a full-time loan officer to head up this program. But that person would not start until the second year of this biennium. In fact, I would recommend that this position be limited duration until we see that the that this program's going to fly, that it will work indeed. So they have staffing now to get it going, the cultural facility. I don't think there was an emergency clause in here, and by the time that it gets rolling and going, and by the time that facility gets all their requests together and comes to the Treasury Department to make their presentations, I think that the year that's reasonable. I don't think they would need staff before then.
A motion now.
Does anybody have questions for Phil?
What's this word mean that in here it says includes public as well as non-profit organizations?
Well, we could ask the Treasurer.
Madam Chair, Representative Soa, the reason for the inclusion there was a concern that was expressed by community colleges as to whether or not they would meet the requirements in a different section of the bill that specifies 501c3 organizations for the ability to move to the authority for assistance. So that was the reason for the insert of the word public.
What is the word public?
Oh, it's in the A and Gross version.
I believe it was inserted in three different locations to take care of that question.
Oops.
There is.
Do you want to give us the line and the page number of this word public?
Community colleges don't have revenue bond authority currently, or do they?
Madam Chair, Representative Hammond, yes, they do have revenue bonding authority.
Would you identify yourself for the record?
My name is Chuck Smith, and I'm with the Oregon State Treasury.
Yeah.
This gives them another alternative.
Yeah.
They have a community.
Yeah.
Well, this will give them alternative finance.
I didn't remember whether they currently had broad revenue bonding authority. Thanks.
You mean they don't? They don't have.
Madam Chair, they do.
They do.
So if they do, why do they come into this umbrella?
Give them access to this mechanism also.
Also give them two access to bonding authority.
That's correct, Madam Chair. This would give them an alternative source for financing.
Mm-hmm. Well, why do they need two access to bonding authority?
Well, Madam Chair, one of the elements of this bill is the ability to group several issuers together to form a larger issue and gain economies of scale. In other words, the cost of the bond council underwriting fees can be spread to several issuers and reduce their expenses by using an authority that can group several people together. So economies of scale would be one reason for going with, say, several community colleges and issuing a bond through the authority.
Mm-hmm. I have a question regarding these expenses. Why can't these expenses come out of the bonding itself? Why do we have to pay administrative costs to the bonding?
Well, Madam Chair, the way that this is envisioned working is that the authority would charge up to 0.5% of the amount of bonds issued as a fee for the authority. The treasurer would have to work out an arrangement with the authority to cover the treasurer's costs in providing staffing, analysis, and essentially administrative functions for the authority. The authority could use a portion of their fee that they collect, or their fee that they collect from the borrowers, as payment for the treasurer's cost, and this would have to be worked out between the treasurer's office and the authority's board.
Mm-hmm. So,
but the authority is empowered to collect up to 0.5%.
So this administrative cost could come out of the 0.5%.
Madam Chair, it would. That is the source for the payment of to the treasury for covering its costs would be fees paid by borrowers for using the authority.
Mm-hmm. So this loan of $10,000 and the loan officer's salary and the bond issuance fees and consulting fees, what's OF?
Other funds.
Other funds can all come out of this 0.5%.
The repayment for the $10,000 seed loan or startup loan, as well as payment to the treasurer in the future for administrative services, can all come out of the 0.5% and other fees collected by the authority from those borrowers. This is not an ongoing general fund obligation whatsoever. It's a self-supporting authority. It will be entirely self-supporting once it gets rolling from the fees collected from the borrowers that use the authority.
Mm-hmm. So the entire $64,919 plus the issuance fees and consulting fees will all be paid back to the general fund. Is that the intention of the legislation?
No. Madam Chair, the $10,000. I should make this a little more clear. That $10,000 in expenditures that is the loan to that facility, that cultural facility, which has to be repaid back, whereas the $54,000 relates only to the Treasury Department. That is their expenditure limitation to pay for the loan officer. I want to point out that this bond issuance fees and consulting fees, you know, it's under the revenue here. I say $10,000 to $100,000.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let me go back to House Bill 5062, which is the bonding bill. In there, currently, it has $20 million in bonding authority. As Mr. Smith said, their fee that they will receive is 0.5%. Well, 0.5% of $20 million is $100,000. So if they issue those bonds on behalf of this facility, they could receive up to that much in revenues, which obviously will take care of the expenses of the Treasury Department. Then in addition, that facility will also receive their percentage, their cut, and what they'll use that money for is to pay for the expenses of the people who work on that facility, plus pay back that $10,000 loan to the general fund within 4 years. I think that's correct, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Well, we're going to stop the discussion on the fiscal impact, and we're going to hear from Representative Judy Bowman. Welcome to the committee.
I'm sorry that I'm late. I'm not sure how far you've gotten with discussing the policy.
We are getting close to
we'd rather
making
move
a motion.
I don't want to stand in your way. Thank you very much.
But we'd like to hear a couple of sentences of support as long as you're here.
Well, the Housing Committee was really enthralled, actually, by the fact that there is a possibility here which has been harnessed in other states, and we're standing on the brink, evidently, mm-hmm. of harnessing it for Oregon, and I think it's a very positive step. What we're going to do is enable people who really do serve the public, but who are private, not-for-profit entities, to engage the power of public financing at no risk to ourselves and potentially really tremendous social public benefit. So I appreciate your help, and I think that's enough brevity for this morning.
We were discussing the bonding limit for this issue. Can you tell us what is the bonding limit for this program?
Well, I had discussed this with Mr. Ryan, and I'm concerned that the possibility is that the program will only be able to, my understanding is it's $20 million right now?
Yeah.
And we had conservatively estimated that the program wouldn't frighten anyone if we had $40 million as a bonding limit. Then we could move possibly with requests from qualified 501c3s, those 501c3s that everyone can sort of identify statewide, like the Ashland Shakespearean Festival, the Newport Ocean Museum, the Portland's OMSI, for example. These are all cultural organizations that we're familiar with. But it's $20 million now. I'd like to see it raised. I don't know if this committee has entertained that thought or if that is before the committee right now, but I think $40 million would enable the authority to stay on its feet and kind of conduct ongoing business. And mm-hmm. I'm not talking about just letting everybody who knocks at the door come in.
The reason we asked was mainly for our own information. The bonding limit is really stated in another bill. It's under the capital construction bill. So it really was for the committee's information.
Yes, it is $20 million.
Mm-hmm.
That's a long Madam answer Chair. To a short question.
Madam Chair, I might add that
Michael Ryan, you need to identify
Ryan,
yourself
me,
again.
Madam Chair, Michael Ryan, Treasury Department. The co-chairs of the Trade and Economic Development Committee came in yesterday and testified on 5062 in support of the $40 million level.
Mm-hmm. But final decision isn't made yet.
Yeah. Yeah, Madam Chair, what I'd like to do
Bill.
Is, thank you. What I'd like to do is I will revise this fiscal impact depending on what the committee on the bonding authority says to reflect what's in there. Whatever they, if they adopt, for instance, 40 million, then the potential revenues to be realized would be 200,000. And I'll revise this just to make reference to that bill when we talk about the revenue side. My concern, of course, was whether or not this could pay for itself at all. You know, if they don't issue any bonds, there won't be any money. And, but I made a comment that the potential for the upside is more than take care of it. So I'll amend this to incorporate that reference to the other bill.
Any questions for Representative Bauman?
Thank you,
Judy. So Phil, is the Treasury's administrative costs going to be derived from the fees, from the bonding fees?
Yes, Madam Chair, that's correct. It's their fee for issuing bonds, like with other bonds, they have their fee.
Then what about the limited duration loan officer? $54,919, is that going to come out of the bonding fees?
Well, let's just say for instance they issue $20 million, and then what happens is the Treasury Department itself will realize $100,000 in revenues, which
in commissions.
Yeah, let's look at it that way. I'm not sure of their terminology, but in commissions, which will more than enable them to pay for this new person.
So the new person would be paid by other funds?
Yes, it's their, that's right, the revenues, the commission fees that they receive.
And the 10,000 will come back to us after 4 years?
The commission, well, we have to separate the two. The $10,000 is going to the cultural facility, okay, not to the Treasury. They're distinct here, okay, the 10,000. I'm showing it under expenditures. I think I'll change that to just say loan from the general fund to the cultural facility, because we're talking about two different entities here now. But back to the Treasury issue, the reason I said it was limited duration is I didn't know if this was going to go or not.
So where is the loan officer going to be stationed at?
The Treasury.
At the Treasury?
Yes.
And then you say at the cultural facilities?
No, I apologize. I'm not making myself clear then. The Treasury cannot take on this program using their existing expenditure limitation.
Are you what sure of that? I think that's the agency that we gave the big over 30% increase since over the last biennium.
It's not my agency.
It's Mr. Latimer's
agency. Well, they have stated that they can't run this program. They envision it to be in a large program, and so that was part of the persuasion they used to.
So Phil, they want us to give them spending limitation increase of $54,919.
Yes.
But the fund will be paid by the commission from selling the bonds. Is this correct?
come to order. We're going to have a hearing and possible work session on Senate Bill 475 and House Bill 3056. We're going to ask John Rist to go over the Senate Bill 475 with us first.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 475 is a pretty straightforward piece of legislation. What it essentially does is it establishes a regional light rail extension construction fund in the state treasury. Interest received on these monies will be credited to the fund and not to the general fund. It designates the Public Transit Division of the Department of Transportation as the authority who may expend dollars from the fund for financing specified projects in the bill for extending the light rail system in the metro area. There's a provision in the bill that says TriMet will match an equal amount of funds for the phase of the specific project for which money is being sought from the fund. And also, Senate Bill 470 provides for a reversion of monies in the fund at the point in time when all projects have been completed, reversion of those dollars back to the general fund, From our analysis, there's no fiscal impact to the Public Transit Division. There will be, however, interest earnings will accrue to the fund and not to the general fund, and unable to anticipate or estimate any cost that may be to local transit districts such as TriMet or local entities.
Does the executive department have somebody to come over and go over this budget request? Well, if there's no question for John Rist, we'll go ahead with public testimony. And on the sign-up sheet, we have Mr. Boltman and Mr. Earl Blumenauer, I should say Commissioner Blumenauer, and Mr. Dick Feeney. We'll hear from you first, Mr. Boltman.
Chair, I think, were you going to lead off this morning?
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For your record, my name is Earl Blumenauer. I'm a member for Portland City Council. I'm here today in support of Senate Bill 475, both in official capacity, that is the policy of the City of Portland, it's taken formally, but more important, I think, as part of a regional partnership that includes representatives from business, local government, the transportation agency, TriMet, the state, both in terms of the officialdom, as well as the people who serve on the commission. We have all attempted to work together to create a package that allows us to address in a comprehensive fashion the transportation needs for the metropolitan area in a way that is compatible with other statewide goals and objectives. Senate Bill 475 is a critical piece, even though, as your staff has indicated, it has no direct fiscal impact at this point. It is an important signal to indicate that the state is going to be a full partner with the business community and with the local government agencies to be able to complete the light rail construction project in the metropolitan area. We anticipate that there will be well over $1 billion of state activity in the next 10 to 20 years as a result of this partnership that is talked about. Having the state participate as a partner is key for our being able to send signals to the federal government that we are serious and reserve a favorable match from the federal government. We anticipate at least one half and hopefully three quarters of the overall funds will come from the federal government, a small portion of our federal tax dollars that'll be returned to us. And in fact, there will be a substantial state general fund impact by getting those monies returned and being spent in the state. It is also critical for the private business investment, because we've already seen with the MAX line in Portland more construction from the private sector than the entire MAX line cost, because it spurred and encouraged private investment. We anticipate that will be a part. And also, as you're aware, Transportation 2000 package contemplates going to our local voters and asking for a range of other fees and local costs, so that the local voters will be supporting this as well. It is a partnership we think is going to serve the metropolitan area, the entire state, and we earnestly request your support this morning so that we can have the state part of the partnership in place.
Madam Chair.
Representative Hanneman.
Earl, what's a federal-state match on most of these projects? Is there one?
Yes, sir. We are cautiously optimistic that we're going to get a 75% match from the federal government for the West Side project that's currently in preliminary engineering. We anticipate under no circumstances would there be less than a 50% federal share. And we're hopeful that between our congressional delegation, we have a couple of key people with Senator Hatfield and Congressman O'Coin in the appropriations process, we think we may be able to retain that 75% share.
Another question then.
Please continue.
When the federal money comes, does that require highway funds then as a match, or general fund, or both?
It would not be possible under our state constitution to use the state highway fund for the match. It would require some source that is not road related under the terms of the constitution as it currently exists. We would not anticipate going into the existing highway fund, but attempting to put other elements in place to provide that match.
They could either be state general fund or local funds, so long as the other 50% is matched, or the other 25%.
That's correct.
Okay.
You're finished.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Why isn't it constitutional to use the highway fund to match the rail fund? Oh, you cannot use highway fund to match the rail fund.
My understanding is that unless you folks do something dramatic in the last couple of days of this session and the voters concur, that there's a very narrow definition of road-related uses. And frankly, our whole package, Madam Chair, was contemplated on moving us past the old squabbles that have bogged down the legislature for the last 30 years about trying to take money from the highway fund where there isn't enough to go around and put it into mass transit. While that may help Mr. Feeney in the short term, it would complicate the overall transportation needs. So we're trying to come forward with a package that doesn't rob the highway fund, but instead has a broader range of funding that would take care of that.
Mm-hmm. So what funds are you going to use to match the federal money with?
Well, first of all, we can demonstrate rather clearly that just in terms of the amount of federal funds coming in, the state general fund is going to benefit by tens of millions of dollars that would be extra general fund money that you wouldn't have without this federal inflow. So I think the state could justify making a significant general fund contribution, because the state, unlike the cities and counties, will make a lot of income tax and corporate tax out of this billion-dollar program. But we are also at work right now. In fact, there's a hearing going on that that Madam Chair, I think you and I are both supposed to be at.
That's right.
in Senate Transportation, that talks about other sources of revenue that will be available. That's one of the things that we will be working on this interim and with the bills that are currently at work, is to come back with a range of choices for the legislature and the governor to try and come up with what makes the most sense. But in order to get us kicked off, we really need to have the fund itself established.
If there is no questions from the member, thank you.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My uncle here will finish all the parts.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Dick Feeney. I'm the Government Affairs Director at TriMet, and I also represent the Transportation 2000 Committee that did ask for this legislation. I can summarize some of the points that we think are important. I did include it in some of my prepared testimony. This bill would enable appropriations to this fund to be used for preliminary engineering, final design, right-of-way acquisition, and construction of an extension to our existing light rail system. It names the projects that are eligible for funding as the five regional light rail extensions that are identified as top priorities in the existing RTP, or the Regional Transportation Plan. And those include the West Side Corridor, the corridor between downtown Portland and Beaverton and to Hillsboro, the Interstate North Corridor, the Interstate I-205, the Barber Boulevard Corridor, and Lake Oswego. Senate Bill 475 sets up some rules or guidelines and states that no money should be spent on these projects before certain criteria are met. One is that the Mr. Bolton, as Director of the Transportation, certifies that local and state approvals are in place for that segment of the project to which money is being asked from the fund. That the corridor to be supported has been certified as a regional priority by the Joint Policy Advisory Committee on Transportation, which is a committee of local government officials and is a part of the Metropolitan Service District's overview of transportation activity. And also that the state's financial participation is met with an equal commitment of local funding. These rules are very much like the rules that were set up for the Banfield Light Rail Construction Fund and can be found in ORS 391. These pretty much mirror that very successful program. And one of the things that Commissioner Blumenauer pointed out is that, and your committee staff pointed out, is that the whatever money would be put into the fund by the state can accrue interest and then be spent for the purpose of the fund. In 1979, the legislature appropriated $16.1 million to match the Banfield project. That was in an interest-bearing account for the project, grew to over $25 million before it was spent. And the way in which that particular program was handled, no further appropriations were required or were asked from the state to put up the local share of the project.
What's different, Mr. Feeney, I'm going to stop you here for a minute and ask you, how does it grow from $16.1 million to $25 million?
It was an interest-bearing fund, and the interest did come back to the fund. And that's what's contemplated here. Those are pretty much the rules that were set up in ORS 391 when the Banfield was put together.
So over how long a period?
Well, the fund was set up in 1979, and I believe that the last expenditure of the fund was probably 1986.
I was going to say 85 or 86.
And that the state pretty much had the rule here, which is contemplated here, that the state's money would be would be last money. In other words, assurances that federal government's money was in place. And the way in which this legislation is set up, that approvals have to be in place, and fundings have to be assured for completion of any project segment in which for which funds is being required, is pretty much what happened in the Banfield. So that the interest did grow, and the call down of the funds probably didn't start in a heavy way until about 1983. The groundbreaking was in 1982. And we did not have to come back to the legislature to ask for any additional funds during that period of time. Now, what is different between this proposal and what happened on the Banfield is that when the Banfield was constructed, is that the state put up the major amount of the match. Frankly, these rules here do state that the locals must put up as much money as the state puts up. Our hope is that that will be a 50-50 partnership for the local match. 50% of the burden to be shared by local governments, by going to its own taxpayers, by using its own resources, and the other 50% to come from the state. The total amount of money that was matched on the Banfield was something in the neighborhood of $50 million. TriMet put up about 13. If the rules contemplated here had been in place, TriMet would have had to put up about 26. The source of funds, source of money for this funds, for this fund is not, of course, stipulated, and no money is appropriated. We do have an amendment that we have suggested after some discussions with a number of people, including the governor's office, which does support this legislation. If in the future a specific source of a revenue source, if for instance a continuous revenue stream were allocated to this fund, it might be helpful if there were some alternatives to lump sum payments into the fund for the state to contemplate. And I have attached an amendment to my testimony that provides some flexibility for funding if a continuous revenue source were in the future, by action of a future legislature, to be committed to this fund. By the authority granted by the amendment, the Department of Transportation could enter into an agreement with the Transit District to provide some portion of that of those funds over a period of time to the light rail construction. And the Transit District would be able to leverage that commitment so that it would have perhaps a larger amount of money up front to meet the requirements of the federal government to manage.
Mr. Finney, what is this specific revenue? What is this continuous stream of revenue you're talking about?
Well, that is actually a discussion probably for another session of the legislature, and we are not at this time proposing a specific source of funds. In the past, it has been general funds. We know that gas tax money cannot be used under the Constitution. The funding that has been available for mass transit capital project over time has been general funds, has been lottery funds, and have been stripper well funds. And that if that same mix of resources available in the future or others not now contemplated or identified, it's my understanding and hope that the fund would be eligible to receive all of those, except of course any that is restricted by the Constitution to be used for anything other than strictly road purposes. So we do not have a source of funds that would be specifically used for that.
So, Mr. Feeney, why do you want us to set up a fund when you don't have the source of revenue identified? There's no money to put in the fund.
Between now and the next session of the legislature, we will be completing preliminary engineering on the West Side project. We will be identifying the cost of the West Side project. We will be making a final environmental impact statement and certifying that one with the federal government. And we will, in fact, be prepared to negotiate with them a long-term agreement on how to fund it. It is necessary, ultimately absolutely required, and in the first instance, extremely helpful if we can identify that any official moves have been made by the state or by local government to begin to put together the authority and the rules, as well as the actual money, under which local entities will participate in funding the project. And the existence of the light rail construction fund, the authority for the state and the Department of Transportation to participate with a local entity in building this, is an extremely important message to give the Congress of the United States. In addition to that, Madam Chair, Senate Joint Resolution 12 has passed both bodies and is going to the voters. Senate Joint Resolution 12 would enable local entities to use money raised by a local vehicle fee. And I realize if another proposed statute must pass to make this totally complete, but SGR 12 would enable a local entity, for instance, a transportation district in Portland, to ask local voters for a local fee on vehicle registration for transit construction purposes. Now, this will be an election in May of 1990, statewide vote. After that, our region will be asking our voters to participate with their own tax dollars. It is helpful if we can demonstrate to the people who are contemplating kind of put up their own tax dollars that the state has taken definite moves to write its own rules and guidelines on how they would participate. I realize that it takes another session of legislature to actually determine what monies will go in there, but it will in fact be helpful to say that a light rail construction fund has been authorized and exists and is ready to receive appropriations from future legislatures. And I know that the state itself would, in supporting this, I think would see that the entire package is helpful in getting the community as a whole to decide to go ahead and fund. So it's a part of a larger picture and a big community effort involving the state in trying to identify the funds. And at this point, it's an extremely important sort of building block to get this all together.
Dick, before the election on the increase in registration fees, what money do you have to pay for your environmental impacts in engineering designs that you want to do now?
We have had some, we do have a grant from the federal government to do preliminary engineering. We have the funds to do the preliminary engineering and the final environmental impact statement. At this point, we are matching that with some local monies. We have, at this point, it's tight, but it appears that we have the adequate funding to take us into the next session of legislature for all of the phases that we see that we must go through within this next fiscal year.
Mm-hmm. And the grant is, that money is received in TriMet's account, not anticipating the new account.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
So why do you need this account if you can do it under your existing account to do preliminary design and the election of increase in fees, registration fee, is next May? So by the time you have the whole mechanism started, it'll be January 1991.
Well, it is true that the account this fund has set up begins its important work of dispersing funds after the next session of legislature would appropriate some monies to it. Because as I stated, it's extremely important to have that fund in place now in order for us to continue to have conversations with the federal government and indicate the determination of local authorities to fund. We will be sort of escalating the degree of commitment from the federal government as well as we hope from all the other entities between now and the start of the next session. And we would have to have some rules and guidelines anyhow sooner or later in order to govern and guide how the state would participate. It is extremely important for us to get it as soon as possible and so we can point to that as a body of authority. If, for instance, we had to wait until the next session of the legislature, it might not take form as evidence of the state's willingness and as evidence of the rules and guidelines and the nature of the state's participation, not just its money amount. Until the next session is almost finished, and that might be fairly late in the game to indicate the what type of state participation would be involved. We would hope we could have that set up ahead of time. We would hope that in the next session of the legislature that the discussion would be on the amount of participation rather than how it would participate. This really sets the rules on how ODOT would disperse the money, how ODOT would require certifications and proofs from the Tri-County area. We would like to have those rules and guidelines agreed to now. So in the next session of the legislature, hopefully as a result of successful work with the local voters, that the discussion will be on the amount, and perhaps the nature of the funds to be given into the fund. Mm-hmm. The rules are extremely important. These rules are extremely important rules and are the ones upon which all contractual relations with the federal government in putting forth a contract will be designed.
Mm-hmm. Well, Dick, this is an extension construction fund. It's not a, why do you extend it? Why do you need to extend?
Madam Chair, we have an existing system between downtown Portland and the city of Gresham. It's about 15 miles long. We contemplate adding to that for the eventual completion of a system that has corridors in several of the highly populated, densely populated areas of the community. There are no rail lines that are contemplated that would not fit into the system. So it is an extension of existing effort. We are making an entire system that connects.